my name is Brooke, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to Wacky Paw 15 in Las Vegas. Wacky Paw is the Western Area Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. Please help me open this meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that cannot happen, change, courage to change the things that can, and wisdom to know the difference. Amen. All right, the topic for this panel is Shit Happens, and I have asked Joel to read a passage from the AA literature related to this topic. Yeah, it's right here.
Good afternoon, family. My name is Joel, and I'm an alcoholic. This reading was found in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the Bog Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 87 through 88. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. More efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead.
Thank you. I would now like to welcome our first speaker, Jake M. from Los Angeles.
Jake alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 30th, 2007. My home group is 3720 Knuckleheads in Venice, California. Yeah, it's good to be here. I didn't sleep that much last night. I was thinking about what qualifies as shit happening. And getting sober was not what was like in the norm or like what I was planning on. So I guess that was something that happened that can be qualified shit happening. But I got sober in Los Angeles. I grew up in New York, moved from New York to LA, and then pretty much jumped into everything. And because I don't have a lot of time, I'm just going to go. I got to 13 drinking, and then like 13 and a half, I started smoking speed, drinking, weed, everything. It progressed really quickly. And when I was 13, I looked like I was 7. And so getting alcohol or getting anything was difficult. So I hung out with older people, and they thought it was funny to get me like 40s because they looked really big in my hands, and like I just didn't know. It was just like the laughing stock of the group of friends that I hung out with, which is fine because they gave me attention and didn't really. As long as I was getting what I wanted, I'll do whatever that meant, you know. So high school, I dropped out of high school, and I started getting homeschooled, and what happened was that my mom became my teacher, and I did school for about 2 hours of the day, and then I could do whatever I wanted. And that gave me time to experience things that most people in high school Fucking Jonesy, I fucking love you. That gave me time to experience things that someone in high school normally wouldn't experience. So that was fun. High school was fun. I went to parties, and everybody's drinking, and I would proceed to do the drugs that I like to do at these really nice houses, and they'd be like, "What are you doing?" Because it just wasn't normal for most people, at least for my age. I think I just got introduced to everything really young. You know, my brother's 19. He's at West Point Military School. My mom and dad are in the movie business, and I can smoke crack better than they can. And that's like what my bragging rights were in my family. So what happened was in 2005, I went to New Mexico. I go to New Mexico every year. I went to New Mexico in 2005. I went to the hospital Christmas, and due to dehydration, that's what they said. But I knew what it really was, and it was from all the drugs, you know. And I just wasn't. I dropped down 80 pounds. I didn't eat for a week. I was there from Christmas to New Year's. A little past New Year's, and I got back to L.A. And realized that L.A. was the problem. And in Orange County at Huntington Beach. Don't do that. and I started surfing at Huntington Beach. This part of my story just... I never talked about it until last year, and I've been sober 4.5 years. And this is one of those secrets that I was going to take with me until I died, you know. And I met this girl, and we started surfing, and we're both 17, and we fell in love. And I thought it was. I don't really know what that shit is anymore. And she ended up getting pregnant, and I talked to her parents, and I was going to move to Orange County and work for her dad. And then, you know, in February 2007, we found out it was a girl. So I bought all this shit for like girls or whatever. I didn't know what I was getting. And I would commute. I would go from Orange County, or I go from LA to Orange County. And she was seeing a doctor at UCLA. And I kind of stopped drinking, kind of, and doing all that stuff once I met her. And I was in L.A. and I was drunk, and I didn't really like drinking and driving at that point. And she called me, and it was like 10 o'clock at night, and she said something's wrong, and she was coming up to L.A. And on the way to UCLA, she got pinned on the 405, spun out against the guardrail, and her and the baby died. And I was waiting at the hospital, and I got a call from her mom saying that happened. And I remember not crying, not feeling anything. And you know, that whole part of my drinking history I never thought that I would be able to say that out loud, you know. And there's people that I've known since, like, my first day of sobriety here, and they didn't know, and I didn't tell anybody, you know. And it was, like, one of those deep, dark secrets that wasn't going anywhere. June 2007, I drank and used to try to feel anything, and I couldn't, nothing was working. You know, I started doing all this bad shit and, like, you know what we do. Just not the way that I was raised, you know. And in June of 07, I walked from Boyle Heights back to Culver City, which is 15 miles, with a bottle of Jack Daniels in one shoe, and drank the whole bottle and didn't feel anything. And I'm a small person, and usually half a bottle of Jack Daniels, I'll feel that pretty well. And I didn't feel anything, and I got to my mom's house and told her I needed help, and I got help. And I went to, I was fortunate enough to go to a treatment center, where I met my sponsor, who's still my sponsor today. Alright, I got that out of the way. Now sobriety. So I got sober. I was in treatment for a month and a half, 2 months. While I was there, I went to the 49th IKIPA in Los Angeles, California. And I went there, and I went to panels. I went to the main meeting. When I went to the main meeting, it was a Saturday night, and they did the countdown. And that was the first time that I felt something bigger than me. You know, I never thought that that many people can one and two be sober and be happy, you know. And when they started saying, like, the whole keep coming back thing, that's all I hear. And since then, I joined the Young People's Committee in L.A. And service is just a big part. And, like, in my time that I have, I've made a lot of mistakes. I learned from my mistakes. That's what I should say. I learned from my mistakes. I went to, I have a family member in the program he has 26 years, and he wanted to show me the ropes about helping people and doing 12-step calls, and I don't think he knew what he was doing either. And there was I think I had 2 years, and I went to Modesto, and we went to go talk to this parent, this mom, whose son was, like, locked up in a crack house down the street for, like, days, and she, like, didn't know where she was, but kind of knew, and, like, he owed the dealer money. And so my family member tells me to go knock on the door, pretend that I'm, like, buying drugs and pull him out, or, like, it's a long, I mean, I'm not going to go there, but anyways, he ended up, the kid who was 17 when I got sober, he was 17, and I saw when we jumped over the wall running, I saw that, like, same look in his eyes that I had in mine when I came here. And he ended up going to treatment. I'm not sure if he's still sober or not, but yeah, I realized that I can't save people, you know. but I learned that the hard way. I have another story from San Diego. It's about a stripper, and she, yeah, fuck. Another one, I learned to have big books in my car because I meet a lot of new people, and so I had like 3 or 4 big books in my car, and me and this other person went down to San Diego, and it was his friend's daughter who was 21 who was prostituting and shooting heroin, and he tells me to get in the back seat, and I'm sitting there like lying down, and I'm like holding the big book, and he pulls over, and she gets in the car, doesn't see me, and he started like talking about that he knows his parents, and then for some reason I just like kind of stood up and like it was like, I'm Jake and I'm an alcoholic and we're going to and oh yeah. Is that old school AA? I don't know what old school AA is. You know, I've been to 25 funerals. I've been to the hospital a lot. I'm on 3 lists at the hospitals in Los Angeles for doctors who usually see adolescents, and if they have a drug problem and they're in the ER or something, I'll get a call and just, you know, do what Bill and Bob did. That's how I got sober. I don't know. I learned that, you know, it talks about not being afraid to go to the most sordid of places. I can't remember what else it says. But I was... I'm going to stop out of this right. I was at... I got a call from this 15-year-old girl that I was helping out who just moved here from Russia, drinking. She was going to Samo High. And fuck, I hate this story. She was in... I got a call and she was in the bathroom at this guy's house in South Central Los Angeles, and she got molested, shot up with heroin, beat up, all this shit, and I got a call and she's like, can you come pick me up? And I go out there, and you know, I always remember I always have to keep God in my pocket, you know. And she came out. And so did the other 5 guys, and I got kicked a little, twisted my ankle. I went to, my home group was the next day, and I showed up on crutches, and, like, I just didn't feel like explaining why that happened. And she looked a lot worse than I did, and she went to treatment in Florida, came back, and on her 17th birthday... 17, she overdosed and died, and you know, seeing these things that, especially in young people's in AA, it's like you, I think the whole being young in AA is like not normal. And, you know, I was the drunk that would, like, end up at a high school that I didn't know in, like, a math class. And I just, like, woke up there. And that's, like, how, that's where I came from. And, and to be here today and to be able to do, like, all this young people shit and, like, you know, I've been on Wacky Paw, hosted a convention, and we're bidding for Wacky Paw this year, and, like, there's just, I don't know, shit happens. That's, like, shit happens, but I keep coming back, and it's all about helping the next person no matter what, and whatever way that looks to you, that might be paying for dinner or seeing them at the hospital, you know. That could be, that's up to you. So if you're new and this is your first convention, please go to the Saturday night meeting, because that's where I found my God and put it in my pocket, you know, and like that countdown changed my life forever. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Drake, for speaking. Now I would like to welcome our next speaker, Natalie Kay from Los Angeles, California.
Hi, I'm Natalie, and I'm an alcoholic. So thanks, Jake, for asking me to come out. I feel like you asked me because you knew I wouldn't say no, and I don't say no to an AA request, even if it's in Las Vegas. Man, shit fucking happens. I guess, I mean, when I think of shit happening, I think of, like, life on life's terms, you know? But when I was getting loaded, it was definitely a different story. Shit was always happening when I was getting loaded. Like, weird shit, you know? Like Jake, I really like to smoke crack, and I like to smoke crack naked, and I like to sweat, and I like to watch the Discovery Channel, and I like to get really weird, and, like, that was my shit, you know, and, or in closets, you know, it was weird, I always felt like shit was crawling on me, and that was normal, you know, and, I really didn't mind it, actually, and, you know, I started getting loaded at 10 with my mom, because she's awesome, and, you know, her shit was like she got drunk. My dad cheated. Well, this was the first shit that happened. So my dad cheated on my mom. He moved in the chick that he cheated with while me and my mom were still living with my dad. And my mom was like, well, I guess I'm going to move out because this is weird. So she moved out and she started drinking really heavily. And then after she would pass out, I would start drinking with her. And that became a daily routine with me and my mom. The next shit that happened, I guess, was... I don't know, sometimes when I'm drinking with my mother, I can get really depressed, and then I get a really good idea of trying to kill myself. And I listened, oh, man, I was, like, super obsessed at this time when I was, like, 11 with Elliot Smith, and, oh, jeez. And I thought it'd be a really good idea to write a letter in math class because I was failing math, and I was algebra. Oh, man, so tough. I was failing algebra, and I thought about writing a letter. And I was writing this letter in math class, and I was like, I'm going to kill myself right now. So I took a pen to my wrist, and then I missed, and it hit my part, like the blood splattered on my partner's paper, Matt Rich, and then he started screaming, and then I started screaming, and then the next thing I know, I'm hiding under the counselor's desk because everyone's looking for me, and I proceed to sniff glue for the next 2.5 hours. So they find me with glue on my face, blood everywhere, and they sent me to UCLA Psychiatric Hospital because that was the best idea at the time. So I spent a couple of weeks up in there, and by the time I got out, you know, nothing had really changed except, like, everyone at school knew me as this, like, suicidal, like, glue-sniffing weirdo. And I really didn't like that. I was like, how can you have this perception of me, you know? Like, I'm a good kid. And I proceeded to get loaded, you know. It was really convenient. I had drug dealers that lived across the street. They introduced me to cocaine, and, like, that was awesome. And because I really like to be awake, and I really like to do things, and I really like to talk really fast. And then he started to find out how old I was, that I was only 12 and a half and doing all these, you know, favors for him. And he was like, yo, this is kind of inappropriate. I don't want to get caught. He was very paranoid, which was weird. And he told me if I wanted to, still get high, that I had to go downtown. So I started taking the 720. It's a bus in L.A. to downtown. This is my mom calling. Oh, she's sweet. And see, my mom calls me today, and she's like, not like, where are you? But I love you. How are you? So I started taking the 720 downtown to San Pedro Street, and I got introduced to crack, and that was it, you know. I had to do really incomprehensible, demoralizing things to get what I wanted, because I was not a very good thief, but I am a girl, so I was good at being a woman, I guess, you know, and did what I had to do, you know. And man, I hated living like that, you know, but I didn't know that there was any other way. And so, you know, people started finding out that I was really skinny. I'm 140 now, but that's all muscle. But I was 115 back then. And and I was scary looking. And I had green hair. My head was shaved, and the other was long, and it was green and ugly. And, you know, they were like, what's going on? I was like, I'm smoking crack, but I'm going to stop. And and at this time, I didn't have a backpack at Lincoln Middle School because I was selling Vicodin, and because that's what I like to do too, is vitamins. And I got in trouble, and I wasn't allowed to have a locker and all this stuff, and I had to eat lunch with the principal's office, and that was a good amends to her. Her name was Pam. And so the next thing that happened was I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I got sent to an outpatient program, and no one wanted to be sober, but they did talk about AA. And I got introduced in January of 06, and I didn't get sober until April 18th of 06. And April 17th was like any other day, you know. I was doing my normal shit. I was getting high, and I ended up in a public restroom stall in Venice by myself, sniffing a line off of a toilet of shit, literally. And funny that this is shit happens. And then I had that moment of clarity that the big book talks about, that Bill talks about, and I was like, you know what, I need help. So I went to my treatment, and I was like, yo, I've been getting loaded. They were like, I'm aware. And I was like, what do I do? And they're like, go to a meeting. So I started to go. I went to Thursday night at Ohio Street, and that was it, and I haven't left since, and I have a little over 5.5 years. So I walked in when I was 14. There was this girl, Bailey, who was 16 at the time, who also liked to snort coke, and we went to meetings together every day for 2 years, you know, and we went to high school together too, and it was rad, you know. Like I always, you know, when I got to AA, I always thought like things were happening to me, you know, and but really, like, coming into Alcoholics Anonymous and doing a 4-step and looking at my part, I realized that it was my selfishness, my self-seeking, my dishonesty, and you know, me acting out of fear that was causing me all this pain and suffering. And you know, Bailey, she got loaded after 2 years, and we still remained friends. And but then she went into treatment a couple months ago, and you know, she when she got out, she called me, and she was like, yo, like, my parents say you're still sober, like, can you be my sponsor? And I was like, whoa, like, I'd be really honored, that'd be awesome. Definitely. And so we started going through the book together, and I was at SoCalipaw also speaking on a panel, and I got out of the panel, and I got a call from Bailey's dad saying that she overdosed on heroin, and that she was dead. And I remember going to the main meeting at SoCalipaw and being really upset, and kind of thinking it was the first time ever being at a convention where I felt like, wow, like, a lot of you aren't going to be here anymore next year, or, you know. And it was really sad, you know, like, everyone was playing these, like, playing music and, like, standing on chairs, and I didn't get it, you know, because Bailey was really beautiful. She had strawberry blonde hair, and she was my bestie. And, you know, I went to her funeral, and I showed up, with my sponsor and a couple other of my friends. And I don't know, it was very weird. And but I told myself, that I'd give her parents a call when in a couple of months. And I called her parents just this coming Monday. And I talked to both of them for an hour, and they told me how much they love me, and how grateful they were that Bailey got to meet me, and that I got to have, you know, an impact on her life in a positive way. And I was like, I'm so glad I got to meet her, you know. And you know, that one was tough, you know. That life stuff was tough. But it's something that we experience around here, you know. And it doesn't get easier, you know. I don't get over it. I just learned to live with it. And you know, this past year has been definitely interesting, you know. Another one of my good buddies, Phil, you know, passed away too. And I went to Icky Paw, man. And you know, I met this dude there, and you shouldn't meet anyone at conventions, you know, that you're sexually attracted to. It's just bad, you know. And we meet, and we're doing our thing, that, you know, what we're here to do, basically. And fucking, you know, we come back. So, you know, and I've known him for like all of his sobriety, 2 years sober, and I was like, yo, you know, like, this is pretty cool, but like, if you wanted to stay in like SF, that's cool, or if you want to bring it down to LA, like, it's all good. And he's like, let's bring it back down to LA. Okay. Day 4, he tells me he's in love with me. Day 9, I have his keys. Fucking crazy motherfucker, you know? And it all started at Icky Paw, you know, and it was a really rad experience, to say the least, you know. And the coolest thing was, it was like, you know, like, when I wasn't feeling it anymore, I got to be like, you know what, dude, I really care about you, but you can't give me what I want, you know. And I like want someone like your sponsor, you know. That's what I said. That kind of hurt his feelings a little bit. And, you know, and then I remember seeing his sponsor came to the meeting, this meeting the next day to see me, and he's like, yo, Nat, like, what you did was really rad. Even though he's my sponsor, and I love him, but he's like, but you're my best friend, you know? And he's like, I even told my wife about it, like, that shit's crazy. And, you know, that was cool. And, you know, I got hit by a car last week, and, you know, life stuff, you know? People hit you in cars, you know? And, like, I had to go to the hospital because my brain was swollen, and I didn't know until I had an MRI done, and yeah, that was weird. And, you know, it's like, life is good, man. You know, I think it's just all about perception, you know. Like, what the 12 steps have done for me is what fucking crack and alcohol did, you know. Like, when I took that hit or when I took that drink, you know, my perception was changed immediately, you know. And through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, working with others and doing a thorough four-step and, like, making those really tough amends, you know, especially to my parents and those living amends, you know, I've had my perception has changed, you know. Like, even though, like, things happen that cause me pain or suffering, you know, whether, like, it's my part or, like, it's always me. So, you know, my perception is different. Like, it's all good today, no matter what, you know. Like, I stay sober and I help others, no matter what. That's my main purpose. That's all I have to do and continue to show up, you know. And life's pretty fucking cool, you know. I guess while I'm with this, you know, today, like, I had a really shitty job because no one will hire a 16-year-old even though I have 2 years sober. Except at this restaurant, they gave me food poisoning twice. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to leave. And I was like, yo, like, what? I was asking my sponsor. I was like, yo, Enrique, like, what do I do? And he's like, well, get another fucking job, Nat. And so I got another job, and I became a lifeguard because I like to swim, and I think it'd be cool to save people, you know. And, like, they gave, like, an ex-crack addict, you know, like, a CPR fucking certificate, you know, and that was crazy. And I get to, like, teach kids how to swim, and, you know, like, recently I just joined Angel City roller derby team, you know, and like, that's rad, you know, and I get to have a fucking name, Natural Born Killer, and I get to fucking hit girls and like, you know, like, fucking kick them with my wheels, and it's rad, you know, I'm 5 years sober, and it's dope, and I wouldn't change it for the rest, you know, because it's like, I don't know, we get in here and like, we're like, what do we do, what do we do, and like, we just keep on living, you know, like, we get a job, we go to meetings, and like, we work out, like, my workout's like, hitting fucking girls, you know, and like, all that, and it's dope, you know, and like, some of the girls, you know, well, Jude, she's my derby wife, and she's gay, and you know, she's like, I want you to be my wife because like, you have the best boobies, and that's why, you know, and like, then I found out she was 3 years sober, and like, then we go to meetings together, and it was dope, you know, and I don't know, life is really good, so I just want to thank Jake for asking me to speak, and thanks for letting me do a service.
Thank you, Natalie. Now I would like to welcome our final speaker, Kevin C. from San Clemente, California.
Woo! I'm an alcoholic. My name's Kevin. Hey! Shit happens. I hope it doesn't happen in this room, because the only exit is blocked by this stage. Good fucking luck getting out through the hallway filled with pre-reg tables. Go Wipa. Oh, fuck, I love White Paw. Whose first White Paw is this? Wacky Paw, Any Paw, Hooky Paw, Grampy Paw, good amount. Who's absolutely madly obsessed and insanely in love with White Paw? Anybody? Come on. All right. We'll see if I get to the second. So I actually had to think. I usually don't think. Like, thanks, Pat, for getting me to talk at your meeting Tuesday night. So the guy just called me. He goes, hey, you want to know what step you're going to talk on? I said, no, surprise me. I think that's much funner. But obviously we knew what we were talking about today. And, man, I really didn't. I had to look at the panel, the program. I know it has, like, two lines. Shit happens. Don't drink no matter what. I had to really think about that one. And the first thing on more of the serious, you know, traditional shit, you know, when I did a four-step and I did all that writing, I got to a part of it. I don't know if my four-step went like your four-step, but part of it was based on fears. And the number one fear was my grandfather dying. And God's good, man. If you find a God, well, if you've made it to the four-step, hopefully you're getting there. At least you're concepting on something. But he's good. He waited about 5 years for me. He waited for me to get about 5 years of sobriety before he allowed that fear to happen. Because at some point, I don't care how little or how long a sobriety you have, at some point in sobriety, you're going to walk through all those fears on that four step. And if you avoid doing that four step, the fears will still be there. So you might as well write them down and start working through them, because at some point when God says you're ready, and it's time to walk through this, that's what's going to fucking go down. And so shit happens for me. I've cried very few times in sobriety, and I cried a number of times on that one. You know, I was there in the room when my grandfather passed away. And between my father and forget who else was there. Another alcoholic was there, I can tell you that. And you know, I was the one, you know, I had to close Grandpa's eyes and stuff like that, and that was some heavy fucking shit for me. I don't know about you, but that was some heavy shit for me, man. My idol in life. I mean, when I was out there and I couldn't take care of myself, this man made sure that I at least kept breathing day to day, and he got to watch his grandson go through some shit. And, you know, shit out. So it says don't drink no matter what, so I don't want to do too much about, you know, shit out there, but I remember there's like this one federal case. And or a thing. It didn't turn into a case, but it was like I used and abused. So after that loving pitch about my grandfather and how much I love that man and still do, you know, when I was out there, I didn't treat him that way. Just to give you a small idea of what happened, you know. So I did some illegal activities, mailing illegal substances through the family business when I was, I don't know, 15 years old or something like that. And he's the one that caught the rap for it. And when the FBI calls you and says, sir, we're going to come and, you know, it's a good size building. It was like a 23,000 square foot building that the business was in. And we're going to come and basically turn your house upside down because we think that there's illegal activities going on there. He goes, oh, no. He goes, I'll come to you. You're not fucking stepping foot in my building or my property. You don't have the right to. And I got an idiot grandson, so let's just talk about this, you know. That man took more fucking beatings for me than I could count. And at any rate, so eventually one day those fears, that shit's going to go down. I don't want this to be some droopy, sad-ass fucking pitch. But so that's kind of on the serious note, you know. I don't know about on an uplifting note. How do you give an uplifting angle on shit happens? It's kind of weird, right? You know, one thing I was going to share about, so when I was, that grandfather passed away when in 03, March of 03, so I had whatever that 5-6 years sober. Within a year or so after that, I found myself being the only candidate to start taking over that family business. While he was there, while he was alive, he was captain of the ship, and basically what got left behind was a family who everyone wanted to be captain, and there can only be one captain. So what ended up happening was it practically skipped the second generation and fell to the third generation, and I was the oldest of the third generation, and I found myself at like 25 years old having to figure out how to run a company. I'm an overachiever. I don't know about anyone else in the room. I'm an overachiever. I went to 4 high schools in 3 years. And in sobriety, I've started 3 colleges. I don't know. I'm really good at starting certain things and quitting other things, you know, like I start schools and I quit nicotine, you know, every other month. So I started taking over this business. Well, sobriety gave me the opportunity and the privilege to completely drive that business into the ground and just like kick it while it was down. You know, I'm like, I'm not done with you yet. I'm going to fucking make you look even worse. And that was a privilege that and an opportunity that I absolutely would have missed if I would have stayed out there drinking and using. And what's that turned into? Well, thanks to my grandmother's love, who's still with us, she supported us financially through that absolutely treacherous 8 years. And, you know, over the last year, I finally, I can't say because of my hard work, because I'm a fucking idiot. I don't know how to run a company. But apparently I can design really cool tools. That's what we do, is we make special tools that assemble airplanes. So I can design these tools, apparently, because that's what Grandpa did, and that's like what he taught me. And those sell. I just don't know what to do with it once it happens. Like, you're supposed to, like, take an order and produce stuff, and that's how you get paid. So I've learned the hard way on I can always tell you, you know, I hate egotistical people, including myself, in sobriety. But so when when we're sitting around the campfire chit-chatting about life and what to do in sobriety and what not to do, is my theory on this is that I can't tell you what to do, but I can give you a number of things of what not to do, at least what didn't work for me. And if I stay away from the things that didn't work for me, I usually find the things that do work. And thinking I know it and I know how to get from A to B and bob and weave through all the gauntlet of life, I'm lying to you. I'm absolutely fucking lying to you. And if I haven't figured out how to do something wrong, I do my best to tell you who I think has tried to figure out how to do that particular part of life wrong, and I tell you to go talk to them, and including sponsees or anything else, you know. You want to sit down and talk about 12 steps, I'll give you my experience on that. But apparently sobriety happens all aspects of life. And every single person in this room is going to go out and fuck something up royally. We're going to sit together in a meeting that night and talk about how that relates to the 12 steps in sobriety, but it's life. You know, just because one of us gets sober does not mean the fucking world's going to stop turning. That sun is still going to rise. The sun's still going to set. And all the normies of the world are not going to give 2 flying fucks about you or me at the end of the day. And that's just a part of life that, I thought getting sober was a major accomplishment. I was like, give myself pats on the back, you know, I was waiting for my medals and my awards and all this stuff, and they never came. Funny story, I was on a panel Monday night up at this, it's a probationary, basically if you go to juvie and you're a nice kid, you get transferred to Camp Snoopy Juvie, and that's where I do panels every 2 weeks, and I say that like I've been doing it for years. I've only done 2 panels. It just started this month. But it's a really fucking cool place. So I'm talking to the kids, and they voluntarily get to go to this panel. So I was trying to give them some credit for, hey, man, I know you guys could be like playing Xbox right now. They're like, well, we get this award. I'm like, oh, you get an award? They're like, yeah, if we go to so many panels, we get a certificate that says Alcoholics Anonymous on it. And I was like, they make those? Like, there's a certificate that says I graduated Alcoholics Anonymous. I fucking want one. I was like, how many times do I have to come back, guys? I want one of those certificates, too. You know? So, you know, new in sobriety, you may not know the difference or what our hopes and dreams might be of the 12 steps. And so I guess someone at that facility just prints off these certificates. And so if I ever get one, and I will take a picture of it. And if we're friends on Facebook or any of that shit, I will post it. Okay? I might blur out the words on it. But, you know, at any rate, I thought that was kind of funny myself. That's not necessarily shit happened. That's just some funny shit. So, you know, and let's see here. So I got to that company, by the way. I mean, I took that thing through Chapter 11. Who can fuck up a bankruptcy? This guy. We got kicked out of bankruptcy. That's how fucked up we are. Somehow we're still in business, though. I don't know how that all adds up at the end of the day. But the company's actually been producing for the last 6 months, so praise something. Holy shit. We might be able to start filling in the hole that we dug and make it a little less deeper every day. You know, shit happens. I don't know, man. I've started and failed at a lot of things in life. I thought I was a giver, so I started a recovery house. That was a fucking dumb idea. If you have a house you can't sell in a down market, don't make it a recovery house. Just rent it to some normies, okay? Do what works for the rest of the world. That's what I get for thinking again. Those great ideas. And you know, I don't know, man. I will say this too while we're talking to the microphone. Whoever's listening to this recording, and whoever came up with the piece of paper that you wanted the speakers to sign is something, I don't know, that's not the Alcoholics Anonymous I grew up in. So I didn't sign your piece of paper. I put an X through it, and I threw it back at the people, my amends to them. Hope I wasn't too rude. And, you know, we got to not incorporate Alcoholics Anonymous here, man. I don't think Bill and Bob, you know, I got tapes from, you know, one of my favorite speaker tapes is Bill, the day that Bob died. And if you haven't heard that talk, it's a good one. And I'm pretty sure he didn't sign no piece of paper that day, and that gave permission for people to make copies and et cetera, for me to listen to the tape 40 years later. You know what I'm saying? So talk about shit happening, man. I've gotten a lot of shit happen this year. Who's friends of Akipaw? Anybody? Come on. Who's going to Akipaw? Every SOB, because I don't want to be too offensive to people I don't really know. Man, I hope you guys show up to Akipaw. It's going to be in Ontario. I don't even fucking know. What, March 16th, something like that? There you go. If you drive from here, you should make it by March. You could walk, drive, take the Jake Theory. It's a little bit more than 15 miles. But, man, if you want to see a group go through some shit happens to groups too, not just individuals. Let me tell you what. That's why they wrote the traditions. Hey. And you are going to see a miracle. If you show up in Ontario in March, you will see a miracle happen. I promise you that. If it's Sunday at noon and the closing meeting has ended and you did not experience a miracle, come find me. I will be there. I promise you. I am looking forward to it. I can't wait. And, you know, these conferences that we do this stuff all the time. They've been doing it much longer than most of us in this room have even been alive. They're for us. This is your Akipaw, you know. If you go to Akipaw, guess what? That's your Akipaw. You know what I'm saying? And it's going to happen every single year, no matter what these days. And what's one? Fuck count? Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, we're getting there. Shit hasn't really happened with SoCalipaw yet. That's why I didn't really get into that. But if you go to Akipaw, you will experience a miracle. I absolutely promise you that. And if not, you come find me at the end of the weekend, and we'll fucking write down what happened, and we'll see if we can't filter out the miracle. But I will be there, not necessarily with bells on, but I will be there, and I will be very excited, and I will high-five everyone in this room if you show up and give you hugs and lots and lots and lots and whole bunches and all that shit. So that is a group that has fought for sobriety this year, and they need support. They could use support from everybody in this room and everybody at this conference. And I hope that that message gets spread throughout this weekend so that we can go support them and that area and that conference and that message. Because there's a new guy somewhere, and it's going to be his or her best Akipaw ever. And that may or may not happen without you showing up. So let's come together. Let's make some shit happen so that we don't have to have panels about shit happening. And fuck, man, there was a good one I was going to talk about. What was it? I don't know. You want to talk about SoCalipaw? SoCalipaw has shit happening. Not drinking no matter what, man. I mean, try starting a new convention in Southern California with those politics. You know, there's been a need for this SoCalipaw thing. There's another thing that could use some great support, man. There's been a need for this thing for probably about a decade, in my opinion. There are a lot of young people, man. I have the privilege, had the privilege of getting sober December 6, 1996. I had another privilege of finding a home group, which is the world famous Yorba Linda Wednesday night Young People's Rumble. And technically speaking, my home group does not have a number. I guess the knuckleheads, you guys have numbers. So I gave my home group a number when I was sitting over there. It's 0001. And so it's the first Yorba Linda World Famous Wednesday Night Young People's Rumble. And one of the most amazing meetings that saved my fucking life. The reason is because it was not a Young People's World Famous Young People's Rumble when I got there. It was a bunch of older people, gray hair, stuff like that. And I was basically the youngest person in the room every week. And when I walked into that room, those people, they came around me, and they loved me until I could love myself. And then they left, and young people started showing up. So now we describe it as a young people's meeting. And I don't get to go every week anymore. I moved about 40 miles away from it. And with the daughter, the business, the traveling, the this and the that, I'm lucky to go once a month, and which for me is a miracle. But I still consider it my home group because it saved my life. And the men and women of that meeting are still ingrained in the opening cover of my big book, which I somehow still have. And it reminds me every day that of what they did for me when I go through that cover. I remember all the old stories of how that phone number got in there, you know? It's cool shit, man. This panel's going to end early, man. You guys gave me like 40, 45 minutes, and that's just ridiculous. I wish that upon none of you to hear me for 40 to 45 minutes. But, I will tell you this. Shit continues to happen. If you come in and you get the hopefully the founding principles that were given to me, if they were given to you, you know, I didn't have any of that shit. I didn't really know how to cook. I didn't know how to shake hands. I didn't know how to look you in the eye. I didn't know how to do any of that stuff, give respect or even get respect when I got here. And there was a group of men that started. They met every week. It was a men's group. And they had a camp out that I, to this day, have the privilege of going on twice a year. And when I went off those camp outs and stuff like that is when some shit really got to start going down, and they started teaching me. And I didn't get it all the first time, second time, or third time. It took many years, and they're still working on me. And you can find a home like that as well. And these men, you know, some of them have passed away, and we're all there at the funerals. When there's birthdays, we're all there at the birthdays, and et cetera, the weddings, whatever. And it's a great thing, and it's a great honor, and it's a great respect to be able to do that type of stuff. And see shit happening in sobriety doesn't always have to be negative. Where the fuck was I going with that one? I don't even know. God damn it. Any rate, men's groups rock. If you're a woman, get a women's group. Stick to the women. Men stick to the men. Oh, that's where I was going. So I found a new men's group. And shit happening. You know, we always got another drunk in us, right? And there's a kid. I didn't really know this kid. I just I found this men's group because I haven't been able to go to that many meetings lately. So I started going to a lunchtime men's group twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. I don't even know if the meeting has a name yet. I just fucking have been showing up to it. And there's a lot of guys with a lot of time there, and there's not a lot of newcomers. So when they do, they usually stand out. And about 3 weeks ago, I had the privilege of sitting next to this new guy on one of the couches that we have in the room. And he got up. It's an hour meeting. He got up and down and left the meeting and came back into the meeting probably four or five times. And I didn't really get to talk to him. We shook hands. We introduced, and we talked briefly. And apparently that's the last time that I'm ever going to get to see that guy. He was, I think he was like 23, and he decided to once again go back out, and I guess his thing when he was out is home invasions, and he went in and robbed a guy in Dana Point, and that guy happened to sleep next to a loaded gun, and the guy shot this kid in his house, and he died on the scene. He bleeding, he crawled back out the window that he came in and died in the guy's backyard. And, you know, when I think about going back out, I don't think about shit like that. You know, I don't think about what I'm going to do to survive or do what I got to do when I'm doing what I do. And that's the type of shit that I don't want to happen to me. You know what I'm saying? I got sober, honestly, to get rid of my probation officers, because I had to get my parents off of my ass, because I was 17. And I didn't give a fuck about quality of life. I didn't give a fuck about hopes and dreams. My hopes and dreams was to get a construction job working $10 an hour so that I can hopefully get my own apartment to where I would have two fridges. I would have the really small fridge, and that was going to be for the food and stuff. And then the regular size fridge was the beer fridge. And that was like my hopes and dreams. And I was going to put really bright lights in the beer fridge so that when you open the door, it was like, oh. But I never got to experience that dream, you know. It's no longer a dream these days, but that was all that. If I did that, if I got those things, man, I fucking made it. And I cut myself short. I will tell you that. And even at 3 months sober, I got to write down a list of anything and everything that I ever wanted to accomplish in life, and get that I didn't already have. And there were three things. And there was like a sports car, a truck, and I'm pretty sure like a girl or a girlfriend. I wasn't too sure I knew what I wanted in that department, but something to do with the opposite sex. I know that there were three items. And this happened at a church, and they had me self-address an envelope, and a year later, they mailed that list to me. So I had a year and about 3 months sober when this list comes in the mail, and my mom calls me, because I haven't lived at home since I've been sober. She goes, hey, something came to the house for you. So I go over there, and I pick it up, and it's from this church, and I open it up, and it's this fucking list that I wrote a year ago. And I was like, oh, my God, what a joke. And I'm pretty sure I gained and lost all those three things in that first year of sobriety. I mean, that's just the description of life right there. But it was amazing how much we will cut ourselves short in life. And to this day, I just quit making lists like that, man. I got goals, and I'll work towards them. I've learned how to do that in sobriety. But as far as cutting myself short, I just try not to get those good ideas anymore, because I've always cut myself short. And these days, what all adds up to is that business is finally starting to get itself together. It put enough couple bucks in my pocket before the holidays. I haven't had a family vacation since I've been sober. And I got sober in 96, late 96. So somehow talked my family. I've been going to Kauai every year with my sponsees to go surf. Somehow talked my family into going to Kauai with us. So there was eight of us total, including my lovely girlfriend and her mom. And, right? And we will never do that again. I it's one of those great ideas again. And I cut myself short, should have left the family at home. And I love them dearly. And next year I think we'll go to Palm Springs for the weekend. But after how much money we spent on that and everything else, but I got my hope and dream. And the funny thing is we went to the same town, which our last family vacation was in, where Kevin was not yet sober and had a fake ID and was doing really bad things every single day he was on the island. And came home, cut and bruised and scraped up and everything else, and it was a really bad situation. But I get to live dreams like that, and as amazing as it was, I'm going to avoid the possibility in the future, but it was an amazing thing to get my grandma. The comments that my grandma had when we got home meant the world to me, because she got to spend a whole week with my daughter, and my daughter got her first surfboard all custom shaped too while we were on the island, so that was kind of cool. But so there's a number of great things that came out of it. But package deal, we'll go close by. I have that daughter in my life today. I get to be a great father today. She never has to see her dad take a drink or a drug or anything. And I get to show up to that job that basically Grandpa laid the foundation for. I'm privileged enough that my girlfriend, Heather Ray Bartley Stringer, right there, just moved into it with me. I don't know why, but she's crazy, and she moved in, and we have a great life together. And it's really weird having two, not sane, but sober people with principles. We work out differences, and we don't really fight. Man, it's crazy. And that's absolutely not normal to me by any means. And I don't know. I got a family that loves me. I got friends in AA that love me. And all I know is that when you don't know what to do, just show the fuck up. And if we take the option of that one last drunk, I don't want to end up like that kid at my home group or my men's stag. That's a bad fucking deal. So, anyway, love you guys. Thank you for letting me share.